It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
A very warm welcome to the 5-Year Plan podcast with me, Joe Walker. I've taken over today, and you know why? Because Crystal Palace have not just won, they've had the result of my lifetime, the result of our lifetimes, and no one could deny me the hosting opportunity. I've been waiting so long to host this episode after a win that it was, JD's taped up in the corner over here, I'm holding him hostage. We beat Manchester United 4-0, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. I am so excited. I need the mic to be taken away from me. JD, I'll untape your mouth, actually. Okay, you might have to take over because this I can't contain myself at the moment. What a result.
Thanks for letting me out. Joe, how does it feel? How does it feel to not just host a win, but the win of a lifetime?
Felt like too much power, if I'm honest with you. That was very overwhelming. But I appreciate all the messages that arrived after that result, saying, "Surely now, just throw him the bone if you like." And I'll take pity hosting when it comes. I don't mind. For a game like that, it's washing all over me, all over again. And I hope between us we can provide that feeling to all the listeners, because we should be drunk on this result.
Yeah. Oh, you've just given us quite a few title options there. Some very good, drunk on this, I think, is lovely. So Joe's here, I'm here, and Grace Matheson is back. And we worked out the last time you came on was after we lost to Arsenal 5-0. So I'm glad we're able to get you back on for essentially the reverse result. Welcome, Grace. How are you?
Thank you. Yes, good to be back with some happy stuff to talk about, some sweet redemption since January.
Sweet redemption, also a good title. I think we're going to have quite a few title suggestions this week. We'll also be talking about, obviously, that spectacular, fantastic win on Monday night against United. Maybe we were talking about Elise Glasner's hug, potentially, answering some questions, previewing Wolves and asking, where was Ollie Glasner on Tuesday night at the end of the season awards? Before we do that, a reminder that this episode, like all episodes this season, is sponsored by our friends at Green King Sport. Like every podcast this season, they are supporting us. Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Make Green King your go-to destination for the season's final stretch. Why? Well, for one, you can watch every televised Palace match along with some delicious food and refreshing beverages. And with 900 sports clubs dotted around the UK, chances are you're within walking distance of your local Green King. We all know that watching football is way better with friends and family, so get the squad together for every televised Premier League fixture in an atmosphere worth sharing. That includes huge title showdowns, the race for European qualification, nail-biting relegation six-pointers, and this week, if you're in a Green King, watching Palace smash Man United 4-0. Couldn't get better than that. Don't forget to download the Green King Sport app to enjoy exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there's a game on. Quick shout out for our patrons, the ever-growing patron community, I should say. Appreciate their support. If you want post-match podcasts, review shows with Dom and Adam, weekly shows last week that Rob and I tried for a bit, join up at patreon.com, patreon.com/FYP podcast. Choose your tier and get involved in plenty more Palace content. And if you enjoyed that win on Monday night, why not celebrate with some FYP merch? Our new merch store has launched, including a brand new Jean-Philippe Mateta design that's available on T-shirts and hoodies and mugs and everything you'd expect at fypfanzine.myshopify.com. Link is in the show notes below. And if you enter the code LAUNCH10, you can get 10% off your order. Right, Grace, let's come to you. I'm just going to simply ask you, and we've got lots of questions about this, but Monday night, I should say to our listeners, if you want analytical review of the show, the game, I should say, maybe listen to the post-match podcast. I think this is going to be an emotional episode, as Joe said earlier, delving into the emotional review of it. Was that as good as it gets? Was that the best ever Palace result that you can remember? Where does it rank?
Right up there. It's definitely right up there in terms of it obviously being Man United, who not just obviously a big club, albeit not as good recently as they have been, but I mean, we've all grown up, haven't we, surrounded by glory supporters, Man United fans, that we've seen their club more than them, but they still like to rub it in our face about how great their club is. So it felt really, really sweet for that reason, and it finally feels like everything's clicking into place. And it was just, yeah, Selhurst on Monday night was just pure joy. I can't remember the last time I've enjoyed a game pretty much from start to finish as much as that. And it was just looking around at everyone with like these silly grins on your faces thinking, is this it? Is this what we've been waiting for? It's right up there, definitely.
I remember, Joe, it made me think, I mean, obviously, like, there's comparisons to Istanbul and people have been saying it's up there with that. I personally think it's better than that because we've won for a start, which obviously we didn't against Liverpool. And because it is Man United, and like Grace said, as a child of the 90s, they are this looming, untouchable thing. And we've not just taken them down a peg or two, we've absolutely destroyed them. But it did remind me of, weirdly, the Danny Butterfield hat-trick against Wolves, in the way that after that game, everyone came out of Selhurst just a bit starry-eyed and a bit, have I just seen this? And I think it was the same kind of thing on Monday. It was enjoyable and the football was incredible. The goals were great. The atmosphere was great. It ticked every box. But also was a slight element of, did that just happen?
I think so many of our big scalps have often been, you know, fighting for our lives, maybe, you know, defending for our lives, certainly, and nicking goals. Even the more, you know, the ones that come to mind, obviously the Istanbul game was just surreal. But I remember another Monday night, I think we beat Man City 2-0. Punchin and Murray, and then you have the Arsenal 3-0 was quite comprehensive, and it's interesting actually to contrast the reaction of the Arsenal fans in a way, and that day, who were kind of you're not fit to wear the shirt for the sort of remainder of the second half, to United fans that just actually kind of refused to engage with that, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah,
but not about them today. I think what sets this performance apart in terms of a great win against a massive club, if not in the table right now, but certainly the sort of clubs you aim for and look for when are we playing them in the fixture list. Before the game, JD, you briefly saw me before the game. It's confident. Being Palace fans, you're going, am I being overconfident here? Am I actually getting carried away with some of these results? Was the Fulham draw just a bit of a sober reminder that, hey, look, we've had a good couple of performances here, but it won't last forever. But all the reasons to be confident were realised pretty quickly. It's not just a win. It's a comfortable win, comprehensive win. Made them look silly. Made them look worse than all but maybe two or three other sides this season that have come to Selhurst. And scored some incredible goals. You know, I think back to our promotion season, there was I think Holloway was introduced at half time Blackburn at home. And the second half in that game in particular was just Bolasie, Zahar toying with their fullbacks, just make it showing the real difference. Actually, we were a team that terrified some of our league opponents. I felt that lot on Monday. It felt like whichever Palace player was in possession, you were confident in. And we had players in the forward areas, certainly, or wide areas, that put the absolute fear into Manchester United. Not their best side, doesn't matter. It's about, let's look at their back four, shall we? Wan-Bissaka, 50 billion. Dalot, I think, is a nominal fee, I'm not sure. Johnny Evans for the academy, but Casemiro, 70 million, out of position, but, like, you know, they pay some serious money for that guy. And there was still a lot of money and spend around that team that we can't dream of spending in 5 years. We put them to the sword, we embarrassed them. And yeah, it was just the difference in a kind of shock result to something like that could be really gauged by supporter reactions in the ground. Just this kind of shaking of the head, the laughing. And I find nothing more infectious than that type of laughter at a football ground of, can you believe this is happening? It's just beautiful. As I say, that kind of starry eyed at full time. A perfect evening. And, you know, the Palace fan in me does start to look at what beyond and thinking, oh, is that, you know, I should hang up, you know, throw my season ticket into the river now and just never come back. But it was, for now, we can just enjoy just a lovely day at the office.
Beautifully put. I think that's a good point. Well, I'm going to say, Grace, before I come to you really quickly, George Was Young has sent in the question that no one wants to send in. And I think let's quickly just sort of eradicate this. He said, was it more a case of Man United being really shit? And Joe's brought up some good points. Yes, they were decimated by injury. And yes, they had Casemiro playing the centre-back. And oh, they've still got a lot of experience here. Five-time Champions League winner. Johnny Evans played hundreds and hundreds of games. So very experienced. Yeah, they weren't at their best. But that doesn't take away from Palace's performance. And in fact, it's why it ranks higher than some of those previous smash and grabs for me is the fact that it comes off the back of four or five really excellent performances. We've been building up to this. This wasn't a stars aligning performance where everything went right and everything went our way. Palace deserved that win. They deserved the margin of the win. Probably should have been more. Should have been like the 1972 5-0.
Yeah.
They were entertaining, scored great goals. And those laughs of disbelief that Joe was saying there, like we were doing them as well, where we were in the main stand, I'm sure those people were, but it wasn't at the result as such, because I think we all suspected Palace had this result in them. And it wasn't even at the shock of it. It was more the fact like, oh, this is our dreams are being realised. This is going like how we always hoped this would happen. And if it was any other team going into this game off the back of five great results, you'd be saying, yeah, that makes sense. And now it's Palace. And so I think we need to give... Yeah, George has made a great question and United were off the ball, but I don't think that takes away from Palace's performance, goals and result.
No, definitely. And that was very much the narrative we had TalkSport on the radio in the car home. And it was just all about Man United. And I mean, we don't care because we just watched one of the best games we've seen. But it is frustrating not to get any of that credit other than the, oh yeah, but Palace did a good job. Like you say, it wasn't just a one-off. Only City are above us in the form table for the last five games. We've won four of our last five. The other one's a draw. That's not fluky results. That's not how it works. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the less people know how great Glasner's doing and everyone else is doing, then the better, because I can't quite get used to all this praise of our players and of the manager. And it's, they definitely all deserve the credit. Everything clicked into place. But it's always the same, isn't it, when we beat a big team? It has been for the last 10 years. Every time it happens, it's the narrative is always about the big team has failed or they're going to sack the manager. And I mean, I think especially with Man United, I'm still so bitter about that from the FA Cup final, where they didn't care about that at all. We had United fans on the train home with us before the trophy had been given. They were obviously all talking about sacking Van Gaal, and it meant nothing to them. And again, it's just, it's never about us. It's always about them. But it's nice to live in our little palace bubble outside all the media and know that amongst all of us, it's been one of the best things ever. And they can't take that from us.
Yeah.
I'd like to add to that. Sorry, Jenny. There have been times we've gone to just Old Trafford, I can think more than once, where Luke Shaw's at centre-half. I remember Allardyce's one of his last games for Palace, possibly. We went to Old Trafford on the last day. United are playing kids, and the aura of Manchester United is still enough. We lost 2-0 up there. It made no sense.
Josh, I mean, already, Harrop.
Yes, who I think left that.
Never heard
left
that name ever again since.
Yeah. I want the huge thing.
Yeah. And we just won at Stamford Bridge and Anfield, and we couldn't get one over them. So it has to be more than that. And I think what's really key to the game, we're going to get into the emotional side of it, but Manchester United, as they have been playing, was the perfect recipe for the perfect team to come and play Crystal Palace at that time. Yes, lots of experience, but that kind of entitlement of, oh, we're a good side, so we have to demand control of this game and work for control of the ball and not kind of just rest on our laurels and hold on to what we've got. They were trying to do front foot against us with, Christian Eriksen hasn't got really many legs in midfield now, and he's coming up against Wharton and Will Hughes, who are two players in the form of their lives currently. And then they have, for the last month or two, been conceding loads of big chances, and we've been creating loads more than ever recently, and it just was not just a perfect storm of, like, you know, styles make fights is something you hear a lot of in boxing terms, and I feel like Manchester United were probably the biggest sitting ducks you ever see for a big club like that. It was just, I just don't think they knew what they were walking into, even despite their form. And it's great to have a Palace side that punishes that, because again, from those references before, and even teams like Liverpool, I can think of a number of occasions. Very often, we have not punished big sides that are not at their best. And I felt like this was the perfect demonstration of what should be happening and what can happen when our best players are on song.
Stars make fights. I made a note of that. That's another good title suggestion. It all played out. I think, how we all hoped it would. And that doesn't really happen at Palace very much. I'm just going to answer a few questions, and Grace, going back to a point you just made. Rick Everly has said, proper discussion, please. Actually, does it get better than this? Rick, I hope we've answered that. Violent Bob says, who do you think would find this result more unbelievable? A Palace fan in the 90s or a United fan in the 90s? Or I'll add that, a Palace fan in his 90s. Who knows? I think everyone is the answer to that. David Kent, was anyone disappointed we didn't manage a fifth? David, just enjoy it. Just enjoy it. I think we all thought there might be a fifth, but I was texting my dad saying, where's Don Rogers? But
yeah, I think he had some money on 5-0, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, clearly. Got one question in a minute I'll come to. But Grace, on that point about the coverage, when you were talking now, I was thinking, it reminds me of like when I was younger and I was really into like obscure indie bands. And like, I'd get annoyed if I went to a gig and there was more than 10 people. And then I'd get really annoyed if they got like airplay on Radio 1 and they started getting famous. But like, well, no, this is my thing. How dare you? But of course, the evolution of that, of a band, means they need to get exposure to earn more money and make more records. And it's the same thing in Palace. Like, I completely get annoyed when we don't get the coverage we deserve. But at the same time, as you said, I like flying under the radar because it means there's less people writing column inches about Glasner or about Elise Enese there at the moment, but maybe fewer about Wharton, although we've seen that as well. Richards, maybe, you know, Mitchell, these people that don't get much. What would you prefer? Would you prefer us to everyone going, bloody hell, this is a five-star Palace team and all their players should be going somewhere else and the managers onto better things? Or would you rather actually that they're all talking about United and we just carry on our little, this improvement, this journey that we can see as the guys that go week in, week out?
Hard, isn't it? Because we've been so used to being sort of like the edgy little underdog for basically since the dawn of time, that anything but that is a bit like, but at the same time, then with doing well comes the pressure and the expectation, not just of our fans, but of people externally. And we've seen multiple times, more so with other clubs than us, I guess, where that causes more problems than it solves. But I don't know. I suppose with the positives of it come, yeah, better manager, playing better, recruit better. The cycle sort of keeps going. Get better players in, sell players on, make profit, and it just grows in theory. Obviously, it's Palace, so it probably won't quite work like that. But I think it's just going to take some getting used to the option of, I probably shouldn't get carried away just yet, but it's just adjusting to that being the expectation and the norm, which I think after the amount of time we've been in the Prem, and that this had to really be the next step rather than just sort of stagnating and staying where we are. And I know there was that tweet doing the rounds about, would you rather be us or Barnsley, or the guy that, is it boring being a Palace fan? And someone said, no, rather watch Barnsley. And I mean, yeah, that's just a load of rubbish, isn't it? But we've had some great times over the years, but for them to keep coming, we have to keep growing. So I think that's what has to happen, hopefully. But like I say, it's Palace, isn't it? So there's usually a spanner in the works somewhere down the line.
That's the shock, that there wasn't a spanner on Tuesday. No, the spanner didn't appear. The spanner stayed in the toolbox, I think, whereas we all expected it to come out. I love the fact that Barnsley fan basically set them up for the defeat in their next match. It was absolutely poetic and beautiful. Also, I think I saw Edgy Little Underdogs at Brixton Academy in 2012. They were a great band. I'm going to wrap up part one there. We've got loads of other questions for part two and loads of things I was going to come to you guys about. But really quickly then, this is a very unfair question to ask you on the spot at the end of part one. But whatever, it's one of those episodes. Joe, I'll come to you first. South Florida Palace says, is this actually the best ever Palace team?
Yes, I think everyone's on song. I'm in a mood where I think I don't fear any opponent at the moment. And we've had teams in form. Towards the end at Pulis here, I think we did win five on the spin, but it wasn't. Some of the wins we've been picking up in this run are against great opposition. And I feel like we're winning them in different ways than we've been used to. If you take the Newcastle and Manchester United results in particular, those are convincing wins in control of the game. That's unusual. Our design for years is, but we've been told, conditioned, if you like, that you have to win in a particular way as a Crystal Palace side. Hold on for your lives and win something on the break. And I've 10 years of that, I was fully ingrained into the idea that that's the only thing we can really realistically strive for. To see that it can be done in the other way, in some of the most like really enjoyable football. Obviously, all winning football is enjoyable, but it's something different about what's going on now. And however long it's going to last, who knows? But it's really exciting. And I think the players, is obviously the manager, but some of the personnel, we're just getting to that point where we're very near our strongest team again now. Mm. Mark Gay came back on the pitch in that game. We're just really missing Decore, I think, and we've probably got our strongest starting 11 out of who we've got. And you're starting to see the difference, not just in the form, but actually just they're all fit and performing, and it's just really fun to watch. Just everything we convinced ourselves that we just get them all on the pitch, and and finally we're seeing it, and it's coming timed against some really big opponents, and we're getting some really good results. I think I said to you just after when I met you outside of the game, starting to think of what
I know
what could have been this year, and maybe, you know, I think everybody listening is hoping and praying, picking a God and praying to them that there's enough of this team and current setup generally going into next season where we can have a real push. And I'm talking like unprecedented heights for the club in my lifetime. I was born before the third place, but I don't have no memory of it at all. So it's a Premier League era. We could, you know, little Conference League trip, but that we could. Why not dream? I want a first leg defeat in Andorra. That's in July. That's all I've ever wanted. And maybe I might have to. It might have to be another year in a bit. But yeah, who would you fear with that team in this form going up against people next year? As it is currently, very few. But we're aware that these things move and change very quickly. There's Dougie Links away. There's all sorts of player linked away now that we're the suddenly everyone's caught our attention. But yeah, this is a very, very, very good team. And many of them will play at an incredible level with or without us.
It's mad though, Grace, isn't it? Because the turnaround is so quick. So I think if South Florida Palace had asked this question 6 months ago, 5 months ago, I probably would have deleted it. Or I think, you know, people would have burst out laughing on the podcast. And it's basically the same squad added two extra players in January who have been fantastic. And I guess it shows the improvement that Glasner has had on the squad as a whole. We know Elise and Eze are fantastic, but the likes of Mateta and Klein, Hughes, has elevated them up to a level where I think actually this is not a ridiculous question. And I think my answer would be the same as Joe's. I think it is. But what would yours be?
Yeah, no, I think I agree. And I think it's evident in how much the players are clearly loving life. And obviously you would be on the back of those results, but it just sort of confidence breeds confidence, doesn't it? And you can really see that the likes of Elise and Poe coming back and getting fit again just has made everyone sort of step up to that level again. And I think this is why we were so frustrated for those first months of the season, is I know we all know we had rotten luck with injuries, as lots of teams have this year, to be fair, but we always knew that the team, the squad, was capable of so much more than we were seeing, even if it wasn't necessarily translating to points. We weren't even seeing the results or the play really that we knew we were capable of. And finally, it's like someone, Glasner, has flicked a switch and it's like, oh, look at this, look what they can all do. They can all last for 90 minutes without looking like they've run three marathons back to back. You've got people shooting that weren't shooting before, and just like Schlapp having a go at Fulham and all those sorts of things. And it just feels cruel that we're now sort of getting to our peak and the season's about to end. I spent so long thinking I've had enough of this season, and now I'm like, do we need a summer break? Can't we just carry on, go straight into the next? So it'll be like you said, hopefully we can keep hold of as many people as we can next summer. But if not, at least the core and trust the recruitment process that seems to have worked over the last few years, that we can sort of build around that and look to the future and get Joe on that cheap flight to Andorra.
Imagine that. Imagine a lovely little weekend in Andorra. That'd be great. We're going to look to the future as well. And that future is part two, which is coming up in a matter of seconds. So join us in a bit.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to the FYP podcast, sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. It's time for your questions. We teased it in part one. A couple of questions here about a certain embrace after the fourth goal on Monday night. Joosh Bailey says, the sight of Elise going straight to Glasner and hugging him after his second goal gave me a glimmer of hope of him staying. Am I mad? Or is there a chance we keep Ebson Elise because they can see something is happening here? And Robin Mickelberg has got a similar question. Is the spirit the thing that will keep this team together? The way in which they celebrate with the manager, the way in which Mitchell was individually congratulated by everyone after his goal, just a feeling of togetherness and working as one. Parrish giving us a wink and just one more year, lads. I hope that's not a typo. What do we think, Joe? Are we being football fans about it? Or is that something, is this a genuine analysis that we can add to it in terms of, you know, if you were Elise and Man City come in at the end of the season, are you saying, I'll do one more year, lads, because something's happening here?
No, I don't think that would be the case. And, you know, Glasner clarified after the game, I think they'd had a chat about Elise taking shots, aiming shots for the near post. I think a lot of, if you actually think about Elise's goal collection, very impressive as it is, it's still often curling into the far post. And I think Glasner suggested in a sort of dressing room chat that just one time, aim at the near post and you'll probably catch a goalkeeper out. And you totally saw that. Onana had already kind of stepped, expecting it to really have to be something he has to tip away in the other direction, and totally bamboozles him. And it's just a really great goal. But in that moment, of course, that's 4-0. That's, you know, we're at the top of the mountain that evening right there. It feels so good. You're mad not to think, dream a little there as they embrace and go, oh, he loves it here. He doesn't need to be going anywhere. And that's the thing. One thing you can say confidently, I'm going to say, I don't want to speak on behalf of anybody else, but he is enjoying his football here. And there is something to be said to that. I know it hasn't always been the case this season, and he's not been fit a lot of the season, but it's not a situation where he's probably at the gates of the training ground demanding to be let out. There's no way he's not enjoying himself. He's got his best bud alongside him, who together play some of the most fun football we've seen down here. And he's in the headlines. He's probably enjoying it, loving the adulation. And he may know, or he should know, that his time will come at the next level. It sounds like there's clauses all over the place around him again. I imagine they're relatively generous. It'll be a nice middle ground between us getting something we're happy with in exchange for having already had an extra year of him. Let's not forget, it might not feel that way, but we negotiated an extra season with him. It just the luck didn't work out until now. But, you know, I imagine it's also low enough that if a club that is worth going to comes in, it's going to be difficult for us to stand in his way. I think that must be just, that has to be the way it is. And you just hope, as a Palace fan, I think I've always assumed he's gone. Everyone else I see, the reports seem to be less sure of him going, as they are, say, of Mark Gay. But you do start to ask the questions. You know, listening to some of the pods earlier in the week, Dom and Rob talking about who has got that money in the PSR clampdown era that we're in. I think clubs might be a bit sheepish about spending that amount of money. You know, there was quite an unusual report today about would Chelsea consider swapping Raheem Sterling to get Michael Olise pay less money for him up front. And you think it might have to be that creative for some of those clubs. As rich as they are, I don't think they're able to spend as liberally and crazily as they have been in previous years. So that might keep him here a little longer, but it's very much a temporary stay. However long we've got him, it's not going to be for long, because he's worth whatever is offered. Like, you know, in terms of whatever the high ball is, whatever the money does eventually go for, I imagine it would be a number that everyone admits is a lot of money for a footballer, and I think it's fair enough, and let him be on his way. Yes. But if in the meantime, if he's delighted and he is enjoying the time with Glasner, rich goal scoring form, and he wants to just, if he's happy to continue, I don't see any reason why he's going to this is a very long way to get to the point that I don't think he's going to kick balls out of the training ground or, you know, go on strike or anything like that in order to get a move. I think he probably understands if the right offer comes, but in the meantime, I'm happy here and I'm going to play some amazing football and we'll get some bonus time with him, some time to enjoy that we've been denied this year.
Yeah, Elise's contract is like a Christmas convention, plenty of clauses.
Oh, yes.
Let's move on to a question from Bradders, which is in a similar vein, Grace. Elise and Ebb's friendship may keep them here for another season. This isn't Dream Team. You know, this isn't Sunday League football. Like, I think this is a different situation. And I think really it's a case of we need to just enjoy everything about these guys. I normally after the game, I'm sort of straight out or going to like get a cup of tea or something. But I watched the players walk off on Monday night because I just wanted to enjoy Ebbs and Elise just like on the pitch in red and blue for as much as possible, because they are sort of generational talents. And whatever happens in summer, I think we just need to enjoy them, their friendship. There was a great post-match interview on Monday with Sky as well, where they're just, they're like little brothers and they're great to watch and very endearing. If this was a soap opera, then yeah, maybe that friendship and that the hug and all that keeps them together. But I think we do need to be a little bit sort of more grown up about this. But I mean, we can dream as football fans, can't we?
We can, yeah. Like you say, they're special, so we've got to enjoy them while they're here, because there's fans of other clubs across the country, across the world, that would dream of seeing two players like that play for their club in their lifetime. So I think we have to enjoy it while we can. But yeah, you never know. There's a lot to be said for being happy and enjoying where he is. This is me really clinging on to the tiniest thing. But yeah, you never know. I mean, and like Joe said, the spending isn't the same as what it has been. Who knows how complicated that contract is. I'm sure sure we've got some good contract drafters on that, so hopefully it's nice and tight and benefits us. But I mean, we know that eventually the time will come. It's a case of when, not if. But if we could just get another half a season, a whole season at a push, would just be a real pleasure to see a bit more of this team fully fit and firing on all cylinders. It just feels so cruel when we're so close to seeing it and then for it to sort of be dismantled. But if that's how it's going to be, then we'll just really enjoy the last two games of the season and then see where we go and who the next sort of rough gem that we uncover from the Championship is going to be, because that seems to be our forte, doesn't it? Or then Rob Reading of someone again, now they're in League One.
Poor Reading. Have they not had enough? They've not been through enough. Yeah, we've been there. To be fair, I guess the transfer window ends at the end of August, doesn't it? Or starts September. So, who knows? We might have an extra 4 weeks to start next season of these guys if things are protracted. I don't really know. I think we need to enjoy them as much as we possibly can. And I think that there's nothing wrong in that. Football moves quickly. As you say, we've been so unlucky with injuries. I mean, if you're on the flip side, you could look at Leicester in 2016 and say, well, look, they had a perfectly good squad and they had no injuries and look what happened to them. Not saying that'll be us next season, but things change in football. But I think it's okay to
put that bit on there.
Yeah, exactly. And I won't be 5,000 to 1. That'll be much shorter than that. Thanks a lot, Leicester. Speaking of then, Joe, let's talk about another potential departure, which is in the director of football office, which is Dougie Freedman, linked again with the move away, was linked with Man United. They went with Jason Wilcox, which again, for a 90s football fan, very weird to see that. Now he's linked with Newcastle. MK says, are we about to bid farewell to Freedman? And Chris Wright says, we've had some rollercoaster rides, but I can't think of a bigger contrast from the low at Brighton, February 3rd. Oh my God, it wasn't that long ago, to the high we're feeling now. Whilst we all want the Gems to stay, losing Dougie Freedman would be as big a loss. Do you agree with Chris there, Joe?
I think it would be certainly a loss that would be felt in a different way to some of the players departing, but it would certainly be felt. I feel bad. I don't know. I can't remember who said this. I read this online earlier and I thought it was a really good point. So apologies if this is you, listener, and I'm not crediting you. I think basically highlighted Dougie Freedman. I think somewhat in terms of the players, someone that can spot a good footballer or good talent or good potential, I think that can be replaced. It's more his sales pitch to incoming players of Palace. It seems to be really impressive. And you can see from the team spirit and the type of people that come into the club, they are all sort of head screwed on, right attitude, good eggs, if you like. And I think that is a skill that Dougie Freedman brings that will be the more difficult to replace, I think. Hopefully the success of the players he's brought in his time here already make that sales pitch a little easier in the summer for whether he's here or not. think if you're getting players coming to Palace, getting called up for England, producing performances and results like that one on Monday, it might be a lot easier. Maybe we don't have to sell this club with much difficulty to that profile of player anymore, because they've seen the model in action. However, you know, that's to just dismiss Dougie Friedman away as a result, it would be naive. I don't know. So there was talk of him going to Manchester United. They've gone with Jason Wilcox. And I don't think Dougie Friedman wanted to be part of the sort of team underneath Jason Wilcox either. Newcastle seem to have, I imagine they've got untold money for a role like that. That might be appetizing to Dougie Friedman. Maybe he doesn't want to make these pitches to young players with potential. Maybe he just wants to buy the best of the best. He wants to spend 50, 60 million pounds on players rather than your 20s and 15s. And it's difficult to really combat that. If that is in his ambitions. I certainly don't know how much we can match his salary offer at Newcastle, if it is something as straight down the edge as that. I know he's had a lovely time on a number of occasions with Palace, but it is just a job. You do have to remove yourself sometimes and go, this is a man from Scotland who has been offered a job in the northeast of England, probably on more money than he's ever been on in his, as a player, certainly, and definitely in a post-playing career. Most people would say yes, I think, and I dismiss any kind of nonsense I've seen online about, he wouldn't make the same mistake he did going to Bolton. I just think it's totally different circumstances and totally, totally different scenario. And I wouldn't hold it against him at all. I just hope there's a way that it doesn't happen, because we've clearly got a good thing going here, a thing that works. Famously seems to be someone that gets on with the ownership system as well, which is, by whatever accounts, is quite a difficult one to navigate in the business. Managers have come and go quite quickly here over the years if they've not been happy with that. Dougie Friedman seems to be accepting of the dynamic and flourishes within it. So I think we'd feel his loss pretty big. But hopefully he's done enough good work if he does leave that it will be a less difficult sell the club to potential incoming players.
Yeah, his legacy, obviously as a player and a director of football, his most recent legacy will live on longer than I think he does in terms of that journey of players from lower leagues to the top via Palace. So I think we can thank him for that. I just can't imagine Friedman in a room with Neymar trying to convince him to go to Newcastle. It's just a scenario. It doesn't work in my head. And Grace, I'd forgotten about the Bolton thing. I can't believe it's happening again. We can't. It is different. It is different to the Bolton thing, isn't it? I think that was a shock. I think this is the kind of thing that when you've got someone that's performing so well, much like Olise, much like Gehi, you come to expect it at some point.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose the principle, might be the same in that the grass isn't always greener. But like Joe said, you couldn't possibly begrudge him for giving it his best shot. After all he's done for us, he owes us nothing. He's been fantastic. But it would be a different skill set, a job like that, and what Newcastle would be looking for compared to what we're looking for. Like you said, unearthing those sort of lower league, lower level talents that we can get a good deal on, make profit out of and do well for the club at the same time. I'm sure he's more than capable of operating at the higher level as well. But we'll just have to wait and see, won't we, and trust that we'd be able to replace him with someone good enough. And I saw someone say today, I think that obviously all the sort of identification of players and plans in place for the summer will have been well underway. So that hopefully won't be affected too much. It'll just be beyond that if he does go, getting someone to fill his boots, which, yeah, would be a tough act to follow. But I'm sure there's someone out there, some budding wannabe Dougie, we've just got to find in the same way that Dougie finds Elise A&Co.
I'm looking at our model, it's probably someone like Steve Thompson. What's he doing at the moment? Does he fancy being director of football? Because that seems to be what we do as a club. Really quickly, I'm going to ask you guys a question from Michael Phillips, going back to the game on Monday, that says, was there ever a better 5 or 6 minutes for Palace fans than being 4-0 up to United, Gehi, Wharton, Eze and Elise on the pitch together, and Glasner in the dugout? My suggestion for this, having had longer than you guys to think about it, would be the few minutes at the end of the 1976 game at Wrexham, where Palace were 2-0 up, 2-2, and had to win by 2 goals and scored 2 goals in the last 5 minutes to go up ahead of Brighton, I think. That would be my suggestion. But it's rare, Joe, isn't it, to have a 5 minutes. I mean, yeah, Michael makes a really good point. Everything came together. Are there any other five-minute patches of Palace you can think about that even live up to that? It's okay if there's no answer, because I put you on the spot. Does anything come to mind?
Yeah, so I sort of have to sort of manipulate the rules, I think. I've never felt like ever before or since like I did in the aftermath of Punchin's goal at Wembley. But there's maybe a minute and a half of celebrating, and then maybe 2 minutes, if that, of actual play after we'd gone ahead. So you perhaps have to kind of engineer the 5 minutes to be in the lead up to that. And I don't remember enjoying that particularly. I think we were holding on for dear life and we looked knackered. So it would be lying to say the best 5 minutes. It would be in these games like this where we've got there's a gap in the scoreline. We know we've got a bit of a 2-goal cushion or something like that against a big side late on. I seem to remember really enjoying Gerrard's last game at Anfield. I think we got a third late on there, and it's just that floaty feeling that we had on Monday night of,
yeah,
we've done it. Oh my goodness. But again, go back to sort of repeating myself from the start, the manner in which Monday happened makes it so different. And it was at Selhurst, and yeah, it just felt very warm. I knowing that it can be done, knowing that we've done it, it allows you to expand the dream even further. It allows you to think of what else can be possible, and we're just seeing some of the best days in my lifetime that the club have produced, which that's a lovely feeling.
Beautifully said. Floaty feeling as well, lovely phrase. I'm adding that to the list of title suggestions. Grace, any 5 minute spells pop to mind over the years?
I was also thinking of the cup final, and actually just Googled how long we were ahead for, and it was a whole 3 minutes. so, which is even less than I remembered it being, so that's depressing. But yeah, like Joe said, even then it was clinging on, whereas sort of Monday was just pure. You knew it just wasn't going to go badly. You knew it was only getting better, and we don't get that feeling very much. The only other sort of comparison I can think of is sort of the games we've had where we've been behind and then late on come on to win. Like, I think I remember, was it Watford at home a few years ago? Was it Jimmy Mack scored?
Yeah.
The winner, was it him? And that was like chaos because of the circumstances of being behind and coming back to win. They're great, but even still, that's a completely different sort of feeling to the feeling of Monday night, which was very, yeah, sort of like incomparable, really, in terms of it felt like we'd earned it. It wasn't a smash and grab. It was a sort of throughout the game, building block by block by block to get this 4-0. And yeah, I'm not sure that much comes close.
I think you're right. I think it is incomparable, actually, because I was thinking of maybe the 5-0 against Brighton in 2002. But again, that was Brighton, who were back at that level for the first time in 15 years. This is Man United. I think you're right. I think it actually doesn't compare. I'm not sure there is another 5 minutes up there. So, Michael?
If we can push it to 10 minutes, that game where we were their first win, the first opposition to win at the Amex, when we came from behind to win 3-1, That was special. But yeah, again, different circumstances, isn't it?
That's a good one. Yeah, yeah. We'll do a whole episode. We'll do 5, 10, 15, 20. We'll do it in 5-minute increments, and we'll make a whole episode of it in the summer. Michael, great question. Thank you for that. Thank you to everyone for your questions. After the break, we're going to play yet another difficult round of 3-2-1. Welcome back to the 5-Year Plan podcast, sponsored by Greene King Sport, where football is more than a game. It's time for 3-2-1. Grace, I can't even remember what we did when you last came on for 3-2-1, but I'm guessing after the 5-0, it was probably... Well, it might have been one of the ones where we gave the fans... Yeah. I can't remember what we did. Anyway, I'll give you the opening bat here. You got your pick of plenty of options from that 5-0. Who do you want to give some praise to?
Well, there's so many good options, but I'm going to go, because I was so pleased that he scored and everyone else was obviously as well, Mitchell. The absolute joy of literally the whole team running over to him, slapping on him on the head, hugging him, was just, you just wanted to run on the pitch and hug them all as well, because you could just, he's obviously so well-liked and he just seems like such a good guy. Quite sort of, I think, seems to be quite sort of shy and unassuming, but just, yeah, it just felt like football, almost like poetry, that he got a goal on Monday night. That just sort of topped everything off. And he often doesn't get the sort of plaudits, or he's had games where it's sort of not been said that he's not got as much to his game as other players in his position in terms of going forward. And we've always sort of said, if he can add that element to his game, then we're cooking. And yeah, it was just a joy. It was, yeah, proper screaming my head off sort of in my mum's ear, because we both love him so much. It was just like, so yeah, he can have my points tonight.
Oh, that's a lovely, I mean, it was a lovely moment. And again, I think added to the occasion as well. You know, we are a family club and he feels like a younger brother to a lot of us, I think, because of the way he's come into the first team. And by all accounts, is a lovely kid and has been really performing well and improving on a lot of areas of his game that felt unnatural playing that position. And he has been getting in better positions. He had a shot at the near post on Monday night, did a few chances in the box recently. He is, you can tell that position is not natural for him, and you can tell he's trying, Joe, can't you? He's really trying to make that position work. And so I think the goal is kind of reward for that. And it gets your prediction for this, was it for this year, was it? Or for the rest of the season?
I said one of Mitchell or Munoz would score, yeah. I don't know whether the bookmakers wised up to it or so many people on FYP backed it. I opened Sky Bet, other apps are available, and Tyrick Mitchell to score or assist on Monday night was 3-1. And I thought, what? I thought, yes, he's been improving. I was like, blimey. So I didn't even put any money down on that specifically, but isn't that a mark of if that's even led by the people laying bets, that the belief that it's going to come, and if it's not and it's led by the bookmaker, then actually just how much further up the pitch he and Munoz certainly are as well, that it is that likely to that he's making a difference at that end of the pitch now. And yeah, but brilliant for him. That's his first goal at Selhurst in front of a crowd. And
oh yeah,
it felt lovely that, you know, Burnley away, I was up there and it was the other end of the pitch, but it was still really nice. That was really different on Monday night. And it was, even like his interview with Chris Grierson after, which I believe is Chris Grierson's last ever player interview, I think it was framed as that at the end. And he's really shy and bashful and that, and really nice. But he said something, I think they laughed at him at Burnley for not having a celebration and just kind of not really knowing what to do. And so there was all this talk, he said that he was going to do a big knee slide. And the goal goes in, and he said, I bottled it. So I just went and hugged Michael. I was just like, oh, come on.
That's so sweet.
He's so sweet, so lovable. But hey, there in that moment doing, and it's not a fighting from wide. That's fox in the box goal, really, from a set piece. Getting there ahead of the defender. Not the goal I was expecting him to get, but when two this season now, and it's enough. It's certainly enough for what we're trying to make him do in this new role. And even in his answer in that interview again, the post-match with Chris for Palace TV, he's asked how the new role is, and he sort of took a pause to answer it. It was very much like, it's different. That was his, what he said, it's different. But as you can see, he's been giving it the best go. It's not everything's coming off, but I don't think we look any worse defensively for it, first of all, which is quite important. There was that mistake for the Fulham goal. He loses possession and then he's ganged up on that side. But that's been very much in the minority under Glasner, and he's making a difference at the other end of the pitch. Just at the top of my head, I can think of Eze's goal at Anfield. I think there's a Mateta goal as well that he set up recently. He's doing the business, which a lot of fans, myself included, wanted to believe he could do, but didn't really have the evidence up to this point, and perhaps could have been proved wrong. But that's, Glasner believes he can, and he has been doing it, and that's, I've chuffed a bit for him.
I think if this was Sunday League and there was a Most Improved Player award, he'd be nailed on for it, I think, because he's... I don't know of a player in recent years. Most players divide opinion in some way. I don't know of a player that's so collectively supported in a way that Mitchell is by the fans. And it's lovely to see. And that's why I think why the goal was so enjoyable.
And that's why the England squad needs him. They need that cuddly mascot of their own.
You can see him on an inflatable unicorn, can't you, in a swimming pool. Like, it's nailed on. Joe, who's your pick then for 3-2-1 this week?
I'll take some low-hanging fruit this week. Michael Olise had the time of his life, didn't he? He's been excellent whenever he has featured this season. Certainly when he started games, Fulham, he looked exhausted. That's one of the first sort of returns from injury I've seen from him where the level of performance wasn't as it has been when he's sort of been able to start for Palace. But he'd had his week 10 days rest, and just Manchester United couldn't handle him at all. His first goal just sits down two players and still has sort of 20, 25 yards to go and puts it away, makes it look really easy. It's just a nightmare all into the pitch. And then the second goal is a lovely finish as well. He is the talking point that seems to, you know, of all them really enjoyable performances from Monday, his seems to be the one that's captured the imagination of the outside world, the wider world. And I think the speculation is going to be very loud, whether or not we're correct on our hopes that we discussed around the hugging Glasner, what that means long-term or even short-term, who knows? But that was a great night under the lights in front of the world. Because when Manchester United play, let's be honest, the world is watching.
Yeah.
The world saw how good Michael Olise was that night. If they hadn't before, that was just exhibition stuff, and it's what you go to football games for. That it's hard to describe that kind of X factor, and you worry when a Wilfried Zaha leaves, or before him, I remember Victor Moses leaving and thinking, "Oh, is it going to get really boring again? Not having a sort of a player that makes you stand up." We've got more than one at the moment, but he's certainly someone that just looks like he can make a difference wherever he is on the pitch, and just thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyable.
He is special. He's one of those players that in 4 or 5 years' time, he'll be, you know, winning international trophies.
Could be anywhere.
And you'll be saying, I saw him play for Palace, you know. And yeah. I had two phone calls today, one from someone in football and one from someone in theatre. And they both opened the phone calls by saying, "Oh, that you're a Palace fan, aren't you, Jim? That Olise is a bit good, isn't he?" So it is spreading. Like people that don't watch Palace regularly are now aware of him, which I think makes our previous conversations on this week's episode puts them into context a little bit. But he's exactly why you pay your money to go and watch football. He's superb. And the way he sat down Casemiro more than once, you know, decorated player, I think just added to the entertainment. Yeah, great night. I'm going to vote for... I'm delighted you guys have gone for those two, because it's great, because I actually left the player that I wanted to mention available, who's only ever got 2 points so far this season, although I only joined in January. And that's Daniel Munoz, who I thought had one of his best game, if not his best game for Palace. 2 assists. The second in particular, again, robbing Casemiro on the byline and then squaring to Michael to do his thing. I thought he seems to get more energetic each game. He seems to play 5 yards higher up the pitch each game. And it really works in this system. We couldn't play this system without him, but he makes this system work. And it frightened the life out of Man United. It allows Ebs and Elise to do their number 10 free roll and do their thing. And I think he's been a fantastic signing. And I think Monday was an example of what he brings to this team. And he was, another player who's great to watch. In fact, Grace, we haven't even mentioned him once. Don't think this week. Okay. I guess testimony to
how good everyone's been. Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, he's fit as a flea, isn't he? Like the rate he runs up and down, that like 1 minute he's up the other end and then you blinked and he's back down the other end and you think, oh God, finally, thank you. Yeah. And it seems to have been like the final part of the puzzle that's allowed everything else to do its job properly. Desperate for him to get on the score sheet now, because I think that'll be a bit nuts if he does. I'd like to see what he's got in his celebration locker.
Oh, he's 100% got more celebrations than Tyreek Mitchell in his back pocket. Joe, there was a great bit in the first half in the far corner where he had the ball, lost it, won it back, lost it, won it back, lost it, and then gave away the foul. But he just kept sort of badgering away. And that energy and that enthusiasm is, as Grace says, it's, we haven't really ever seen it ever really in that kind of position. And it's, wonderful to behold.
Yeah, crazy tenacity and fitness. What's interesting to me, I think his just the signing of him has allowed us to be so much higher up the pitch, even under Roy, for those very small amount of games that he was in charge with Munoz. But that alone was a big difference maker. But on top of that, he's always trying to get in behind. He's always trying to offer the winger. And you can see how that improves everyone around that side of the pitch as well. Michael Olise is a massive beneficiary of Daniel Munoz being in the side. And strangely, for all the players that we've spoken about and the players that are making the headlines, there'll be people that aren't in 3-2-1 this week, like Adam Wharton. They're on the lips of pundits and analysts and people that are watching us, as well as Ebs and Michael Olise and Mateta especially. It's allowed him to be a sort of he's our little secret at the moment. The genie isn't out of the bottle with him yet somehow. Maybe that game changes it, but I think we know what he's brought to the side and what he will yet bring. It still seems to be a player that catches teams by surprise. It's like they just don't factor him in as being as big a pest as he actually is. And you know, his time will come with the goals. I think I'm just going to repeat. We signed him in January, right? He'd played 17 league games for Genk this season, 17, and he'd scored 5 goals. He had a 1-3 record from right back. So he'll find, he'll get his time. And I'm sure he'll have, if it's not rehearsed, it will probably be this completely feral celebration, but I'm sure he knows how to celebrate a goal. And that will be a great moment, because his performances have earned that kind of collective moment with the stadium and the Palace fan base. He's, you know, it's a wonder that it's taken till he's 27 to get an opportunity at this level.
Yeah.
And it may be the fact that why we were so fortunate and able to actually get him in, because that sort of thing is probably, you know, practiced in often a bit too much. You know, if you've missed your window in your early 20s to jump to the Premier League, people might think, he's just not, he never was ready, so now's not the time. But just a great example of actually we can sign players that are ready now and not people that will be stars in the future. It has to be a balance. And he's been just an excellent addition. What was that, 6-7 million?
That's insane.
Transformative for us.
Pocket money. Another player I think has benefited from him is Nathaniel Klein, who's now discovered you can overlap as a fullback or as a defender. Seeing him overlapping
centre-back.
That's
been a really... Wilder approach.
Yeah, it's really... That of so... Elise has now not just got one, but two people on the outside of him. And there was a moment when Klein sat down Kobbie Mainoo, and I just thought, this is lovely. This is, come on. And, it's really great to see everyone playing like they are at the moment. But, again, I think I used to say when Vieira, the peak of that time, trying to explain to fans outside the club, I'd say, it's not just that he's got players in who can play his style of play. He's managed to get Joel Ward and James McArthur to match it too. I think you're seeing the same here with Glasner. Yeah. Nathaniel Klein coming in as a makeshift centre-half, never played there in his career. I think he's conceded one goal in his time playing there in 3-4 games. And it's not ever been, oh, God, we need to get him out of there. Yeah. You know, we're not head in hands waiting for Chris Richards or Mark Gay to be fit. We're fine with him there suddenly. And
wow.
Yeah. That relationship on the right side now, from being what I would dare say was probably our weaker side of the pitch, generally speaking, in terms of what we could provide in attack, everyone had to come inside. Whereas now we're offering a lot of problems on that right-hand side because it's three of them finding a way. I'm pretty sure that long-term, you know, when... So we've now got... Wolves might be interesting. We might have Mark Gay, Anderson, and Richards as the three. Or is it Mark, Anderson, and Nathaniel Klein? If it is Chris Richards, I imagine he's not going to be doing that as much. But who knows? Maybe he does. It'd be interesting to see in the future what that offers. But it does, yeah. All of that is possible with Daniel Munoz.
You know, we'll have reached peak Glasner ball where Munoz has got the ball, Klein overlaps him, and then Joel Ward overlaps him. That's when you know we'll have reached absolute.
And then Dean Henderson puts the cross in.
And then Dean Kiley is also one there. Anyway, I was just going to say really quickly before we pick our 3-2-1, when you were talking about Munoz, he already feels like a sort of cult status at Palace. And I was thinking, we got quite a few like that. You got Munoz, Mateta, Wharton, I think we've probably already reached that. Hughes, definitely. Richards, alongside the likes of Klein, who you'd argue is sort of more legend status, really, given.
Yeah, definitely.
Elise as a legend status already. We've got a whole team of status. You know, it's I don't think we normally get one or two cult players, you know, a season or generation. We're very lucky at the moment. Let's go 3-2-1 then. Grace, where do you want to... should we give 3 to Tyreek? Let's give 3 to Tyreek.
I think he's earned it.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
Shall we do that? Go on then. And then what...
That's what Elise would want, I'm sure. So
exactly.
I'll take the lower points this week. It's fine.
We probably then, Joe, should give... Elise, you know, literally scored 2 goals, probably deserves the 2 and then the 1 for Munoz.
Yeah, I'm good with that. It's that so many could have had 3.
Yeah.
So, but we mentioned before Tyreek being vastly under-rewarded this season on the 3-2-1 league table. So, you know, don't let it say that we don't rig this in the right way every now and then. But look, 3-2-1, it's almost directly matches the Players' Player of the Year award and the Fans' Player of the Year award. So it was 2, so... Mateta at the awards night got Fans Player of the Year.
Yeah.
And then the Players Player of the Year was shared by JP and Anderson.
Anderson, yeah.
And is Anderson second place in our table?
He's third by 1 point. Lerma is second.
Right. Who's probably the unlucky, I think is unlucky not to get any kind of shout there, but.
Yeah. But a bit unlucky. And then Anderson's got. Lerma's actually shared second place with Wharton, actually, both on 15, which is mad considering. He's only been here a few months. And then Elise is on 13 with Anderson and Eze on 14. All the kind of players I think you'd expect to be in the running for copious awards. Mitchell now jumps up to what looks like joint seventh, I think, or eighth, alongside Chris Richards. Munoz is on three. Munoz is tied with Mateus Francer, the Palace fans, and Roy and Ray. So he's got some work to do. But then, sorry, really quickly then, on the player of the year, I have to admit, Grace, I don't normally sort of give too much credence to these kind of things, but nice for JP. It rounds off JP's story, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's mad. It says about how good we are. We've been this week that we've not even really mentioned him at all in this podcast so far, because it's just what he does now, apparently. No, he's like a man reborn, isn't he? Since about December, whenever it was, he's just been sort of in the ascendancy, and it's just, yeah, I think it just sort of sums up Palace, really, doesn't it? That the standard sort of someone underdog just sort of trundling along, and then suddenly it's like out of nowhere picks up. And again, he's another one, isn't he? Like you said, the whole team at the minute, obviously we've got a good mixture of that sort of fun and pizzazz, and then the more chilled players. But he's just those videos the club do of him screaming fantastic after every game now is just so silly and fun, and it's just it's so nice to watch him enjoy it and to see someone show that hard work pays off, and sometimes you just have to bide your time and eventually it's going to come. So yeah, it's nice that he got the award. And I know I saw some people saying, oh, it's recency bias, blah, blah, blah. But if you're looking at pure sort of moments and fun, and which as a football fan, it's what you live for, really, isn't it? Rather than, I mean, we're Palace fans, aren't we? If it was about total football, we'd never been Palace fans in the first place. So if you can't get the joy from those sort of things, then what can you? So yeah, no, well deserved.
Yeah, he is fun.
Suddenly, he enters the conversation as a player that we've been trying to sell, I think, for a while.
So long.
And now we're at a point where we'll be probably the he may end up being the player that funds the stadium developments at the moment. The informed striker in the Premier League over the last sort of 8-10 games. And it's not a fluke. He's been playing really, really well. So certainly since about late November, by my sort of guess. Just really, really impressive. Found it, you know, realizes his physical skill set, certainly, but the momentum of constant starts, runs of games, has just increased his confidence, taking shots at goal that he might not have taken a while ago, and seems to be really enjoying it the whole time. He celebrates other players' goals as much as they do. And, I mean, that finish on Monday was through Onana before he even knew it had been kicked. It was just a lovely demonstration of he can beat a man. And, yeah, it was just like a complete forwards finish, which is unbelievable. Yeah, I'm really happy for him. And, yeah, as you said, JD completes that arc. You know, what says more of the turnaround than that? Player of the year and players player of the year. Like, that doesn't happen by accident. That's just a real testament to probably also what he brings off the pitch on the player's side, which we see hints of in the online content and the YouTube content. But you can tell there must be a whole lot more where he's one of the more enjoyable players at the training ground. He is pure Palace at this point.
That's a good title. Yeah, he is pure Palace. Really quickly, I know people were saying it's the first time that the manager hasn't spoken at the end of the season awards. The Glasnow, I think some reports said he was there and he wasn't there. I'm not too sure.
He's gone to West Ham. That's
exactly, yeah. Well, it's an indication he's off. I don't think it means anything. I think there was plenty of other entertainment on show. There's a well-planned event, lots of stuff happening. Lots of great interviews and stuff. So I wouldn't read too much into that at all. He strikes me as a very, very organised person. If he wasn't there, he was probably doing scouting reports on Wolves at the weekend. And he seems to be very detailed.
Or doesn't want to be the sort of uncool boss that works do. You know, if I just, let me just go, I won't go so you can have a good time. It might be that. It might possibly be that.
Let's assume it's that. Right, okay. So that's 3-2-1 done. We've only got 3-2-1s left. I will say at this point, Mateta is 10 points clear. I think I need to start engraving, because unless Wharton can earn 9. No, he can't. He can't even do it. So Mateta is crown champion because he can't even. Right. I'm going down Timpson's after this. We will we will formally crown Mateta as champion at some point. But well done, JP. That is confirmed. Right, after the break, a really quick preview of Wolves away at the weekend. Welcome back to the 5-Year Plan podcast, sponsored by Greene King Sport, where football is more than a game. It's the, not penultimate, the third last, whatever that is, game of the season away at... No, it is the penultimate.
Penultimate, yeah.
It is. Wait, hang on, we've got two games left. Wolves and Villa. Oh my God.
Yeah.
What a long season.
Crept up on us.
So last away game of the season, away at Wolverhampton Wanderers. Grace, what were we expecting from this one? Wolves like us, nothing to play for. Could be a dead rubber. Could be 5-5. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? I just want to quick look at the form table, actually, because I think their form's pretty dire. I think they're lingering at the opposite end of the form table to where we are. But like you say, yeah, neither team with much to play for. But they've got quite a few injuries. So hopefully with us riding on a high, very nice to end the season away with a good away win. So... yeah, hopefully we can just carry on. I mean, I saw Joachim Andersen's Instagram post this week, wasn't it? He commented like two wins to go, which is the sort of attitude we want of make all the points count, get back to our highly acclaimed status of 12th. It's in touching distance. We didn't think it would be at some point, but we might make it. So yeah, and hopefully just give everyone something to cheer about again.
I think, Joe, we can go. We could go above them actually on goal difference if we get the win, which, as Grace says, is 12th, and then we're only a point behind Brighton. I mean, God, what a way to wrap up the season that would be! Finishing above Brighton, that would be so good. Given how, you know, that 4-0 defeat of the Amex was, as someone said earlier, only the 3rd of February, so it wasn't that long away. But yeah, I think for those making the trip to Molineux at the weekend, it should be quite a fun trip, shouldn't it?
Definitely. I mean, if you're going to look at it from a Wolves angle, they drew away at Burnley in April, then lost at home to West Ham, drew at Forest, lost to Arsenal, which can happen to anybody, then lost at home to Bournemouth. That's a team in that kind of form. The team, you know, we had similar results against Forest, for example, and Bournemouth. But the Palace side that's going there this weekend is already very different to that one in terms of fitness, in terms of application. It's not going to be a 4-0. I think we really got caught Manchester United cold, and I think every side in the Premier League will learn the lessons from that. And I don't think that I'd be surprised if teams ever come to us as vulnerable as that again. You know, the secret's out. But I think we'll give a really good account of ourselves. It's far away enough where, you know, we may tire again. It might be a similar second half to that we saw at Fulham and even Bournemouth away, where games are coming thick and fast, but hopefully not. And one thing that's been really unusual because of how we start games and the cushion that we've given ourselves, it's a very rare luxury as a Palace fan that you're going, oh, it's 4-0 up, let's bring on this player. It's not just like for likes. Let's give Jairo Reid about 25 minutes. Why not? Like, you know, let's give him a run out, which is, we very rarely actually have had the privilege of doing that. And, but it means that we won't have rusty players waiting in the wings now when we do need fresh legs. It's a game I'm now gutted that I'm not going to. I think we're going to give a really good account of ourselves. And that's one of my more fun away days in the last couple of years was the Vieira 2-0 win up there. That was hammered them, really. Something similar to that would be magnificent. I know Wolves fans are terrified having seen the Monday game, so should be one worth checking in for and trying to find the coverage of, because it seems like a season that we don't want to end. And yeah, I just can't wait for the next game.
Are we expecting Grace? I know we saw Mark Gahey, 10 minutes of Mark Gahey at the end. I don't know. Depending on what side of the coin you are, it's either the perfect chance to start him or not worth risking. I don't know if we, other than that, I don't think there's any other change to ideal lineup, really, is there?
No, I don't think so. I think provided no one breaks anything or touch wood in training, it's us, so you never know. Then, yeah, probably not much to change. The only thing is whether we might see a few of the sort of... I did wonder on Monday night, because I know Ratzlacki was back on the bench, it might be nice to see him get some minutes now that there's just league places to play for, which I know obviously comes with money, but it would be nice to see them get some minutes potentially, or maybe like the likes of Ozo. But yeah, apart from that, yeah, I mean, you don't change a winning team, do you? And it seems that the intent is very much to build on it rather than just we're on the beach, we're done for the season. They seem like they want to build. So yeah, not expecting many changes, if any.
The under-21s have a playoff game against Liverpool, and I think it's this week, Joe. Thank you.
Oh, I couldn't actually.
They've got the International Cup game against PSV next Wednesday, but I think that under-21 against Liverpool might be this week. So I don't know if that will potentially impact on minutes for. No, they've played it. It was Sunday.
Okay. Oh yeah, though, because we were 2-0 up, and I think we lost
3-2. Oh, we lost, didn't we?
And we missed the penalty. So it's they're reverse Chris Danball, if you like. They're going to have that one.
But, well, they wouldn't have had then they wouldn't have had Jez, would they? No, he didn't play. So yeah, they'd have been missing him big time. But no, okay, that's done. So there we go. Their last game is the Premier League International Cup, whatever it's called, against PSV next Wednesday. So yeah,
which will be a massive challenge because, well, like last year, I think they got not well beaten, but it was quite comfortable. Young PSV's youth side play in the Dutch Football League system in the lower tiers. So it's like a real... they're playing against a men's side. It's not... It's a youth side masquerading, really. Same age group, but they have much more considerable senior football experience, which is why it's such a big test. And it's why they're in the final again as well as us.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the... under 21 lineups. They brought on Jay Spearing with the last 11 minutes. Seems a bit unfair. I know that everyone's now got a sort of more experienced player, but there you go. They're a
mischief. Under 21 player.
Exactly. I'm looking at his little profile photo. And he looks really bad for 21. Life's not been good to me.
Yeah. I can't wait for Palace to bring in one. Sean Scannell's got to be available. Come on, let's make it.
Well,
happen.
We do have one. We have Brendan Kim.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I forgot who played for Bromley, right?
Yes.
I've totally forgot about that. I think we spoke about it on the pod. It's just that's how long a season it's been.
Yeah.
I think I had a long, probably had a monologue about that as well, about why it was such a good idea, and I totally forgot it ever happened.
But... yeah, I don't know if he's still there, but I think he was for a bit. He played against, well, I played against him in the Palace for Life game at Selhurst, and he's so good. He absolutely skinned me for one of the goals, actually for many of the goals. Anyway, so, but yeah, who knows in the future if they'll be able to find another... Who is the Jay Spearing of Palace? Probably David Wright, someone like that, isn't it? Anyway, I'm spiralling. Let's wrap up. Sorry. Thanks very much, guys, for joining. I really appreciate it. Great to see you again. And hopefully we'll see you again very soon.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah.
Joe, you got your pod intro. How does it feel?
It's as good as it was promised to be. It's everything I dreamed of.
Much like Palace on Monday. There we go. Beautifully done. Guys, thanks so much for listening. If you're on the Patreon... link below, post match pod at the weekend and all the jazz that goes on there. And in the meantime, enjoy the rest of your week. Bask in the glory of that victory for as long as you want. And we'll see you again soon. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.